Well, good morning. Hope you're doing well today. At the end of summer, beginning of fall, it feels like summer though, doesn't it? We're finishing a series today that is a building campaign series called Making Room, because we're doing some important upgrades to security of our children's area, our youth area. We are expanding educational and missional space. We're making room for others. Now, when I think about that phrase, it reminds me of a scene from the life of the great theologian Forrest Gump. Take a look.
Do your very best now, Forrest.
I sure will, Mama.
I remember the bus ride on the first day of school very well.
Are you coming along?
Mama said not to be taking rides from strangers.
This is a bus to school.
I'm Forrest Gump.
I'm Dorothy Harris.
Well, now we ain't strangers anymore.
Can't sit here.
You know, it's funny what a young man recollects, because I don't remember being born.
I don't recall what I got for my first Christmas, and I don't know when I went on my first outdoor picnic, but I do remember the first time I heard the sweetest voice in the wide world.
You can sit here if you want.
I had never seen anything so beautiful in my life. She was like an angel.
Well, you're gonna sit down, aren't you?
What's wrong with your legs?
I'm nothing at all, thank you. My legs are just fine and dandy.
I just sat next to her on that bus and had a conversation all the way to school.
My back's crooked like a question mark. These are gonna make me a
next to Mama, no one ever talked to me or asked me questions.
Are you stupid or something?
Mama says stupid is as stupid does.
I'm Jenny.
I'm Forrest Gump.
From that day on, we was always together. Jenny and me was like peas and carrots.
So we got to get back to a sermon and can't keep watching Forrest Gump. But, you know, that scene makes me think about flying Southwest Airlines. You know, Southwest does not have reserved seating, so it's the first one you can grab, and you're boarding in three groups, A, B, or C. Anybody ever gotten in the C group when you got on a Southwest flight? Yep, you know what it's like. I mean, if it's a full flight, and you're in the C group, and you're walking down the aisle, it's like no one makes eye contact with you, because they are either in the window seat or in the aisle seat, which just leaves available the dreaded middle seats. If anybody does make eye contact with you, they look like the kids on that school bus. Not here. Go elsewhere. Keep going. Don't crowd me. But sometimes you get that friendly look, and maybe they even say something to you. You can sit here. And it's like Forrest Gump. When they say that, it's like the voice of an angel. It's like the most beautiful voice in the whole wide world. Making room is an act of grace. That's what Jesus said. The word grace means gift. Making room for others is like giving them a gift. And Jesus described this act of grace like inviting people into your home for a meal. Now, he probably used this illustration because Jesus saw something in his day that troubled him. People turning an act of grace into a reciprocity. People who would invite others to their home to eat, knowing that they would invite them over to their home later on for a meal. And for Jesus, this was a problem. Listen again to the words we heard a moment ago when Jesus says, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers and sisters or your relatives or rich neighbors in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. Jesus says that like that's a bad thing. You don't want that to happen. And maybe he's right. Because maybe when we fall into that habit of doing that, we start to keep a mental ledger going. We start to remember and keep up with how much other people have done for us. We start to turn grace into a reciprocity. Gosh, I've invited them 4 times over to the house. They haven't invited us 1 time. I did all of this for them. What are they really? And before you know it, you discover one day, I don't know when, but I quit giving. All I really do is lend. And grace shrinks. So Jesus says, instead, when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. When you give a gift and you do it for people you know there's no way they can repay it, then you don't have expectation of that. You're sort of free to really give. And Jesus says, when you do that, you become the blessed one. He carries on. You will be blessed because they can't repay you. In other words, grace becomes receiving something you need and you cannot get for yourself if somebody doesn't give it to you. And when you give that way, you open yourself up to be blessed. When you make room for others, you make room in your own soul for blessing. Years ago, I went to a church conference in Chicago. Got to the airport, to my gate, and then it was announced that the flight was delayed. Now that helped me because I had a little problem going on. I had made a reservation for this trip and then I moved it up a day and forgot to change the hotel reservation. My reservation didn't begin until tomorrow. So I had been calling the hotel and the same woman who worked at the desk would answer each time and explain, there's no room, there's no availability, but keep calling back. They sometimes have cancellations. So every chance I got, I was calling back to the hotel, getting the same answer. So I took this delay as a chance to go make that call. Once again, same answer, we are so sorry. There haven't been any cancellations. Keep calling through the afternoon, though. So I go back to my seat, and I thought, well, I'll use the time to work on my sermon, open my computer to do some typing. And I was sitting next to a guy who was really well-dressed, had this sharp-looking suit on, and he wanted to chat. He wanted to like talk and enter in a conversation, and he keeps leaning over and asking me questions and talking about things. And I'm like sending him every nonverbal to say, I really want to work here. Fine. I mean, he's not taking any hint. So I just give up. I just like close the laptop, set it down, enter into a conversation with him. Now, for some reason, as we talked, I happened to mention my hotel dilemma. And he said, well, what hotel is it? I said, it's someplace called Extended Stay America. He said, Extended Stay America? The next time you talk to them, you say, George D. Johnson said to make available to you one of their special reserve rooms. They always hold one back. They are never completely booked. You tell them, George D. Johnson said. And he was like that forceful with it. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. Well, the announcement made, the flight had been further delayed, took a walk, thought, oh, I better check with the hotel, pulled my phone out, called, same woman on the phone, sorry, Mr. Fuquay, nothing is available. I said, I have been instructed to say that George D. Johnson asked that you make available for me one of your special reserve rooms. She immediately said, please hold. About a minute later, she came back. She said, the most incredible things happened, Mr. Fuquay. We've had a room come available for tonight. I walk back, sit down next to this guy, and I'm like, I don't know what that's about, but they had a room for me. Who is George D. Johnson? This guy says, he's the owner of Extended Stay America. I'm his attorney. You never know who you're sitting next to. Turn to the person next to you right now and say, who do you represent? Because let me tell you who you represent. You represent the greatest CEO in the history of creation. You represent the one who owns it all. And when we look at each other that way, when we look at each other as a child of the King, then we understand that everyone around us all the time is somebody who possesses a blessing to give us. We're sitting next to somebody who has a gift to offer us. I mean, when I just made a little room to have a conversation, that's all it took. And I received an act of grace, something I could not make happen. You know, that's why we've been doing during this month of September the Yellow Bench Challenge. We've simply offered this as an encouragement for people to get to know each other. As we've been saying, if you go and sit on that bench, you're kind of letting people know, I'm willing to have a conversation. And if you see somebody sitting on the bench, that's God's invitation for you to go sit down and just introduce yourself and see where the conversation goes. Now, the reason we're doing this is not just to be a gimmick. It's not just to be something to add on to this series of making room. I believe this is more important than the building project we're talking about, because this activity here has the potential to deepen the life of our community, to make us more and more comfortable talking to people we don't know, because our world is shrinking in that regard. We're shrinking because of fear of the stranger, fear of the other, fear of people who are different from us. And many times it's for good reason. Just read the news. But when we give in to the fear, a lot more shrinks. And when we can resist the fear, a lot more can open up. Much of our series has been based on the inspiration of a book by Christine Pohl, who wrote this 25 years ago called Making Room. She writes, any hospitality to strangers has some risks, but the risks and uncertainties seem lessened when, although we don't know the person, we can readily know about them and find easy points of connection with them. We discover when we do this that we need each other, that we really need each other. And the way we experience God's grace is when we experience it in relationship. But the blessing we get is much greater than any tangible blessing. It is certainly much greater than a room reservation. Jesus says it's an eternal gift that we participate in. Yes, he said you will be blessed, but look at the next sentence. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. In other words, Jesus says, when you give gifts, don't look for the reward right now. Don't look for the repayment right now. Understand that we participate in something that one day we'll get to see it. One day we will get to understand how God used us to touch real strangers, the strangers we will never have a chance of meeting, the strangers who have yet to be born. We're never going to run into those people this side of our graves. But Jesus says, when you participate in doing something that can make a difference for God for the sake of generations to come, there will be a day when you get to see that. And the richness of that blessing will be so much bigger than anything you can get right now. When you came in today and you got your bulletin, you received some information in the bulletin about this campaign. And I invite you to take it out. One is the envelope that you have with it, and the other is a letter. And as you lay your hands on this, take a look at another video that has been put together that just helps us remember why we're doing this.
first thing I think about at St. Luke's is community, church family. We're a big group of friends who come together here because we've all felt the tug of God somehow in our lives. Yeah, small groups are important because it's how we connect with people. You know, we're a big church, and that's wonderful, but at some point you need to break it down into smaller groups where you can actually connect with people and live life together. And that's what my small group does. They study together, they pray together, and like I said, they live life together. It's how we make connections.
Today, I feel like they're so much more inclusive, which is very important to me. We have two daughters that are non-binary and myself as well. So having that support has been really important to me. Finding a church out there that would not only include me, who's part of LGBT, but my son, who is in a wheelchair and does need extra assistance. I think that's the world to me, to be able to have my family included in everything that they do here.
Like the camp I went to this summer was, we had to do paintballing, but I couldn't get in the middle of the woods, so they brought it to me.
One of the best things about St. Luke's and Hub for Hope and all of the work that we do here is our community is so welcome and open, and you do not have to be a member of St. Luke's to receive services here, to be filled up here, to be poured into by our community. The Making Room campaign is going to help us reach more families because we already have this entry point where we're meeting families at a very early point in their child's life. And we know we have so many more things that we can offer.
What makes this place unique is that there is no separation for us between secular or our lives or our world or our outer lives and what happens in our faith life. That for us, it is all connected. That what is holy may be the walk you have holding the hand of your kid, as holy as the moment you have here. And we understand that it all works together. And because of that, we take part in the lives of our community in huge ways. We take parts in the lives of connecting here, whether that is Narcotics Anonymous, Sexual Addiction Anonymous. None of that ministry would be possible without a place to gather, a place to grow, a place to do that. And that's true for our online community as well. It is out of this place that they connect with audiovisual equipment and worship services, and it is out of this place that we've launched Midtown in a multi-site, and our ministries are shared. And so this home base, like Wheel and Spoke, or Trunk and Branches, this building makes ministry happen and flourish and community to be grown and built. And God is in the midst of all of it.
So the form that you received in your bulletin is how you can participate, and it can be a 3-year commitment. And what we're asking people to do is look at what you have beyond what you already give to the church or your other benevolence giving. We don't want anybody to take away from that, but maybe you're in a very blessed position where you could give even beyond what you're already giving. That's what this is about. And over a 3-year period, you can multiply that by 3. And many of our leaders and individuals who have stepped up on the front end to make commitments have done amazing things, given very richly to this campaign. We are at $5 million toward our $6.4 million goal. And that's huge to be at almost 80%, but we're still at over $1.4 million to go. And that's why everything that we can give is so significant. Now, I want to acknowledge there may be some people who say, I don't have it to give. I mean, believe it or not, Rob, there is no margin. And one of the things I'm very aware of is when we do moments like this, that there are people for whom a moment like this, rather than being celebratory and joyful, feels embarrassing and makes people feel inadequate. You can still write on this form, I will pray for the church. And I will live out the spirit of making room for others. I will live that out. And I want you to understand, that's not just giving you something to do to participate. If we don't have the power of God involved in what we do, and if we don't make room in our hearts for other people, all the money in the world will not matter a doggone. We must have that spirit. So there's room in this for everyone to participate, no matter what. And I believe God blesses churches when everybody participates, everyone. And everyone says, I'll do my best and I will give my best. I just believe explosive things of the Holy Spirit happen when that occurs. And so what we're participating in is for blessings for generations ahead. It's like widening the table. In many ways, it's just like thinking about our church as one big table, and now we're going to put some more chairs around it. Anybody grow up in a family where you might sometimes have unexpected guests join you for a meal? And you go, oh, of course we've got plenty. And you go grab some plates, and you put them around the table, and you grab the chairs, and the children are the ones going, what do you mean we got plenty? No, we don't. I know how this works. I don't get to eat as much. In Susan's family, her dad was a pastor, and a lot of times on Sundays, he would just invite people to come over and eat. And the kids were always, oh, man, Dad, come on with it. And the mother had this expression. She would say, FHB, FHB, which stands for Family Hold Back. They knew what that meant. Take a little less to eat so we have enough to go around. And they would pull the chairs in, the extra plates. They'd have to sit a little closer together, and they would understand. They always had enough. And the experience of the people who joined them and their stories that they would all admit after the meal, it was like, that was pretty cool to get to know them. It's like our family got bigger. That God always gives us enough to welcome more to the table. I finished my sabbatical, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, going to see Stan Copeland in Dallas. He's been the pastor of Lovers Lane United Methodist Church for 27 years. That's a picture of the church. It very much has a heart like St. Luke's of being open and welcoming to all. And the reason that is their founding pastor, Tom Shipp. I told his story a number of years ago. Tom started this church in 1944, and the spirit in which he started it has a lot to do with his own spiritual story. He grew up in the Depression. His mother died. His father had to take a job out of town and could not be at home to raise the children, so the children got sent to families to live with. He got sent to a German farming family. He arrived on the first day, and they told him all the chores he had to do. When he finished, he came inside and went to the table to join the family for the meal, and the father said, "There's no room at this table for you. You will eat your meals on the porch, and you'll sleep in the barn." He did it for a year, and he couldn't take it anymore. So arrangements were made for him to go to another family. But this was a family that really took him in. They welcomed him to the table. On the first Sunday, they took him with them to church. It happened to be a Methodist church, and it happened to be Communion Sunday. And in this church, everybody would come down and kneel at the altar rail to receive communion. So the father took him with him. The father was on his left side. They knelt down, and while they were waiting for the communion elements to be brought, wouldn't you know it, the man who knelt on his right side was the father of the other household. When the pastor came to them and he reached up his hand to take the bread, the father on the right side of the former household grabbed his arm to put it down. His new father on the left side turned bright red. He leaned over and looked at the man and said, "This is not your table. This is not your table." Just that loud. Just that harsh. The whole sanctuary heard this going on. The pastor froze. They all thought they were going to watch a fight right before their eyes. And the other man let go of the boy's arm, and he took communion for the first time. He grew up in that church. When he felt a call to ministry, they made a scholarship available for him to go to seminary. And when he was asked by the bishop in North Texas to start a congregation in Dallas, He said, if I do this, I want to start a church that's going to welcome everybody. Maybe people other churches don't want to welcome. Alcoholics, addicts, people who are divorced, people who've given up on church or the possibility of a God who really loves them. And that's what started the church. He served it 32 years, and he died doing so. He died in a building committee meeting. I do not make this stuff up. He died while talking about how do we make room for even more. He died the way he lived, making room for others to experience the grace he did. That's not a bad way to live. Speak to our hearts, O Lord, so that we would understand what you call us to do, to offer the grace that's been offered to us, to find that in what we give, what we do to make room for others, there's always a gift to be received. And sometimes we get to see it right now. But for sure, we will get to see it in the life to come. So speak to us, but more importantly, speak through us. For our sake, for the sake of those who are sitting here and around us, for the sake of others who would come to know the wideness of your mercy through St. Luke's, and for the generations we will never know in this life. For Christ's sake, amen.